This is Perry Marshall, and welcome to our phone call today. And I have a little bit of a change of plans here because something came up with Ed Resch this morning, and I was not able to get him on the line. And so I'm going to shift gears, and a different person is going to tell a similar story. And along the way, we are going to cover some very interesting little nuggets. I have Joshua Boswell here, and Joshua is a professional copywriter and a marketing projects guy. He has functioned in all kinds of interesting capacities of doing marketing campaigns for companies, all the way from stuff that he's done for companies like Microsoft and Google and Corel, to little renegade marketers who would be invisible to the rest of the world, and what they do would not even make sense to most people if, you know, you met somebody on an airplane and tried to explain it to them. And isn't that right, Joshua?
Oh, yes, and as a matter of fact, I have tried to explain it, and I gave up on that.
It doesn't always work. So we have a really interesting story here, and it's one of these stories of finally cracking the code on marketing and getting it to work. It's also a story of trying a lot of crazy things and zigging and zagging your way to success, and that, you know, success is not usually a straight line.
I think in one of our meetings, didn't we lovingly call it marketing schizophrenia or entrepreneurial schizophrenia, something like that?
Yes. There's a little bit of ADD. There's a little bit of schizophrenia. There's the fact that if you have an opportunistic mind, then everywhere you go, you see opportunities, and then they're hard to resist. So Joshua and I have this thing in common that we were both in Amway for a long time when we both drank the pink Kool-Aid in substantial quantities. And so...
By the gallon.
And Joshua, without going into a lot of detail on that, I only want to brush on it, but could you kind of start there and explain the tail end of that, and then what happened next?
Yeah.
Joshua was, you know, a circle drawing machine, and fill in the blank.
Yeah. The short end of the version is I got in. I actually did pretty good in the whole multi-level world, which is, I guess, kind of unique. We lived off multi-level bread and water money for, you know, a number of years. And at one point, again, without getting into the full story, I woke up one day and kind of realized that some of the things that were going on in the organization where I was were starkly in contrast to my personal values and perspective on life. And so Margie and I decided to hit the eject button, which at the time was our only income. You know, quite literally, we were doing that full time. And so,
and you were very invested in it emotionally, financially, and time-wise at the same time.
Oh, yeah. It was quite literally, you know, a central component of our day-to-day life. I mean, not only was I drawing circles, at that time I had gotten far enough up the food chain that I was actually running around the country once, twice, sometimes three times a month, speaking at major seminars. You know, it was a huge deal, and so I was fully vested. So hitting the eject button was like ripping an arm off. You know, it was really, in fact, looking back on it, there was a pretty substantial emotional trauma and frustration and angst on that whole thing. And we came out of that and started looking around, because there was a couple of things about it that I really wanted. In other words, I wanted the freedom to work when and where I wanted to, wanted the freedom to have you know, money that would come in without me having to babysit it all the time. I wanted the prestige. I really enjoyed speaking. There was something cool about, you know, having people give you accolades for a job well done. And, you know, there was all those components of it. And I had been, I don't know if brainwashed is the right word, but I had been convinced that the only place on planet Earth to get those kind of things was in a multi-level environment, specifically in Amway. And so when I hit the eject button, I thought, really, my life was over, and I went to work for a little while. I went, well, 3 months. I went to work at a bank and went and was actually an employee, which I don't want to get into a whole employee-employer bashing session, but, like, working for somebody else did not sit well with me.
I'm trying to imagine you in a bank. I mean, Joshua looks good in a suit, but I think, my opinion, it kind of stops there as far as the suit routine goes. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it's a pretty fair statement. So, but the interesting thing about that 3 months, and by the way, the only reason it was 3 months, and this is an interesting side note because it tells you where my head was at. The only reason I stayed for the 3 months is that my brother worked for the same bank. And he got a referral bonus of $1,000 if he would refer someone who was an employee of the bank for longer than 90 days. and he promised to split the money with me if I would stick around.
Wow.
which he did, and I desperately wanted the $500. So but I came off of that and I started looking around and saying, there's got to be a way to be like my own boss and have a nice business and use some of these, you know, principles that I had used and these marketing ideas that I had used and to sponsor. I mean, I just thought to myself, I figured out how to sponsor people and like drag them into this multi-level thing and make a big deal out of it and keep them motivated. It's just selling, really, and there's got to be a way to take that and convert it into something else. So that is really what started the tirade of ideas and businesses, and it was everything from I did professional speaking for a little while. I built a online website or a website building company that was database driven, which in the late 90s was kind of a cool idea to have dynamic content on the site. I did politics, and I buried myself in politics for a couple years, and I did fundraising for nonprofit organizations all across the U.S. I did a call center. You know, name an industry. I bet I've tried to sell or do something. Oh, I was the sales guy for a catering company for a while, which a lot of people don't know, but I went out and marketed a catering company for a little bit. So anyway, that's kind of in a nutshell the story and where life really started to get interesting, and we can get into this in more detail because what happened throughout that is like, it's like I felt like I was running around the country picking up pieces to a marketing puzzle. And I would run from in the fundraising, I knew that writing was important. I discovered that with one good letter, you could raise just thousands and tens of thousands of dollars, which was fascinating to me. The call center thing, I realized that, you know, in dealing one-on-one with people, you could raise a bunch of money and sell people there. And the website business, I figured out you could automate stuff with technology. And so there was like all these different things. And of course, at the time, I was on, and I don't know if anyone relate to this, but, you know, I must have been on 30 or 40 different newsletters of how to do this business and how to run that thing. And it was like I was the flavor of the week for all these guys because I would just suck everything up. I mean, one thing the Amway days had taught me was tapes functions, right? You know, you got to have continuing education, baby. And so, like, I would, you know, the latest guru that would say, you know, come see my stuff. It's the newest and hottest way to get rich online or in business or whatever. Man, I'd go and gobble it up and cough up more money on a credit card and buy this stuff. And it was this process of picking up all these different pieces. But the problem was, for some reason, all these gurus and all these people and all these insights and all these tapes never really got me to the point where I saw the whole picture. And I don't know if that makes sense to anybody, but it's like I could see it all sitting there, and I just couldn't figure out how to make it all work. And so I did all these businesses, and they would crash and burn, or I'd lose money on them. And sometimes I made money. I mean, obviously we kept eating, but it was really a major frustration. And the whole time I'm looking for this, you know, the Garden of Eden of marketing and business, to where money could just flow in my door, and I could sit around on the beach emailing my buddies and telling them that I was not doing anything and making $100,000 a year. Right? That was the end all be all of my mind, and I kept looking for it, and I couldn't figure out how to make all this stuff fit together. So I don't know how far into the story you want me to go, but that's where my life got up to. And I brushed up against Perry Marshall and Planet Perry.
Okay, so don't want to get too far ahead of the story here. So what you're groping around trying to find the big picture. You're doing all this stuff, but what was it that you really wanted?
You know what I really really wanted. And I think the first thing that I wanted was actually, it was just a myth. It was propaganda bull from the Amway days that really didn't exist. And looking back on it, I see that it didn't exist, but it really was that picture of, I could sit on the beach, you know, work for 2 to 5 years and then not do anything for the rest of your life and money just come pouring in. And you can sit around on the beach or travel around with your family, and money just streams in, and everybody's happy, and it's a great life, and you just carry on your merry way because you did 2 years of work and built this business. Well, one day I woke up and I realized that, you know, I'm looking at my upline and what they do on a daily basis, and actually nobody did that. You know, I mean, everybody continued to work and build their business, so. Once I got rid of that, I decided what I really wanted. I wanted to be able to have some components of that, but with a realistic viewpoint. In other words, I still wanted to work for myself. I still wanted a good income. I still wanted the measures of success of life in terms of a comfortable house. And we've got 9 children, so it's like I wanted to pay for all the expenses that go along with 9 children of shoes and food and college and, you know, all those kinds of crazy things. And if we really get into it, one of the things I wanted and that I was running from was the wolves at the door. In other words, all the business ventures, because I didn't have the pieces of the puzzle all put together, there was never quite enough money. It was like constantly this mental and emotional struggle of where's the next dollar coming from and how am I going to pay for this or that. And you know, I got sick and tired of having that feeling of not ever having quite enough money, because I was always hammering down the door of one piece of the puzzle, but never putting the picture together.
Isn't it interesting how, you know, you pursue all these businesses and most of them result in more debt. So you're really just kind of dragging all that stuff along behind you.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, I at one point it was awesome because I had gotten sophisticated enough in business that I went to an investor and convinced them to help me put this call center together. Well, you know, again, without getting into whys and hows, I mean, $200,000 later, we're in debt and the business is folded and we still owe this money, right? That combined with some of the other debts I had from Amway days and the other business venture that I tried, it was like, it was a lot of weight to carry around. And it was, and there was another component of it that's kind of freaky. And that is, I started seeing myself as a business failure. Like, I personally started becoming a loser, right? And that was really, maybe I'm going too deep in the rabbit hole here, but for me that was really, really hard to deal with, because it affected the way I dealt with my wife and my children and the way I saw other people and what I perceived I was worth in terms of when I started dealing with other business ideas and projects. And it, like, the uncertainty and the lack of confidence just kept mounting. And as the debt net mounted, so did that uncertainty. And it was really a frustrating time for me.
I think the biggest question that most men are really asking deep down is, do I have what it takes?
Yeah.
Men are looking for the answer to that question. And it's, I'll tell you, if you're not sure, that really sucks.
Yeah.
And it's even worse if people figure out how to exploit that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's really, ooh. And I don't want to get into all that, but it could get you in some really unpleasant places.
Yeah. Well, I think back to the, and I like the guy, but I think back to the guy that was my investor in that call center, and looking back now, knowing what I know, he must have been looking at me like, holy fresh meat, look at this guy. You know, he's like slobbering to do something in life, and the terms of the way he loaned me the money, I mean, I was a blithering idiot in how I did that whole deal, but, you know, the terms and the situation that got set up were just not good. But I was really a victim of my own, stupidity or lack of confidence, or trying to answer that question about was I good enough. You know, it was an interesting time.
Well, it's not like anybody's going to stop asking that question or stop trying to figure it out. You know, it's not like you just wake up one day and you go, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to set that aside. I mean, I guess people can watch TV, they can medicate it, but really, I think people want to really do something significant in their life, and they want to feel like they have some power to affect the outcomes that are going on, and not just be pushed around by the waves that are rolling in, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, there's another aspect of it that that I really discovered later that I was going through that. I don't know, I just have this impression to share this because it might be helpful for some people who are listening, because it was a major breakthrough. In fact, it was kind of the last proverbial straw that had me, you know, break through and really start getting on top of the game and figuring it out and putting everything together. And it was a switch inside my head. And the switch was, I kept, like when I signed the deal with the investor to build the call center, and I could name a couple of the deals that I did. Like, I always had this idea that if I just did a few things that I knew how to do, then somehow the world would be gracious and merciful to me and overlook all the other things I wasn't doing, and I would be the exception to the rule. Like, oh yes, most call centers need to, you know, start with, you know, I don't know, say $100,000. But if I just borrow this first round of $25,000 from this guy, which it escalated from there, by the way, but, you know, if I just borrow a few thousand from this guy, I'm special, and life will work out okay for me. And really what I was doing is I wanted to be the exception to the rule instead of playing by the rules, or in other words, instead of like to use a silly analogy, I wanted to buck the law of the harvest. Like, I wanted to plant corn and get a whole row of tomatoes and watermelon, right?
Huh.
instead of getting corn. And the interesting thing to me about that is, Barry, is that the day I woke up and I said, I'm going to stop kidding myself about what really success takes and quit being blind to all these puzzle pieces, and I'm going to find somebody who really knows how to put it together and learn the real rules of success and follow them and start doing it, right?
Okay.
And I had a hard time getting myself to that space. Again, maybe not everybody has that problem, but like my level of self-deceit and kidding myself was really high, and we could get into all the specific examples, but I distinctly remember the day I decided, and we can come back, but I made two major decisions. One was a decision to kind of team up with Bob Bly in the early days and learn copywriting, and that was a major piece of figuring the process out. But there was this day when I was sitting there looking across from my wife, and we had gotten a promo about bobsled run and four-man intensive, and we had this conversation about, was I going to keep trying it my own way and keep making up the rules, right? Or was I going to find someone who really knew how to do it and take their advice and really put this stuff together? And, you know, we were like, well, don't really have the money for bobsled, but, you know, at some point something's got to change. And so we decided to quit kidding ourselves and start dealing with facts. And again, that kind of draws me up to where Joshua encountered Barry. So.
Well, I have a word for what you just described. It's the should be world versus the is world.
Ooh, yeah. oh yeah.
And one of the most useful questions I ever learned to ask myself was, am I dealing with this situation the way I think it should be, or am I dealing with this situation the way the world really is?
Yeah.
And I remember somebody saying one time that if you deal with the world as it is, it becomes much easier, and you're fighting things a lot less. Because it's a level of acceptance of, okay, how does this really work?
You know, and I just got to tell you, in dealing with clients that I'm dealing with right now, and the copywriting projects that I'm on right now, and some of the media that I'm hearing and the environment, and I don't want to get into politics or any of that kind of stuff, but I just would like to point out that one of the things I feel is a really strong feeling in the market, and where a lot of people are getting their claws cleaned, is there's this pervasive should-be world floating around out there. It's like, this is the way things should be, and we should be doing this, and the economy shouldn't be in the tank, and there shouldn't be blah, 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 you know, fill in the blank. And I find a lot of clients coming back to me and going, well, but 5 years ago we did this and it should still be working.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? It ain't working anymore, Bob. And it's time to grow up and zip your pants up and be okay with it and try something different.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm a very idealistic person.
Yeah.
I think you are too. And
yeah.
When you're idealistic, there's all kinds of pitches that you become susceptible to. It's like, you know, when I was 20-some, early 20s, and, like, still in college and about to go into the workforce, and, you know, you start to realize what you're committing yourself to. It's like, well, I get these student loans, and I'm studying for this career, and, you know, it's like, you know, If I get into this, I may not be able to get back out.
Yeah.
I might be stuck doing this for the rest of my life. I might not like that. There was nothing more appealing than somebody to show up and say, if you just do this thing for 2 to 5 years that most people are not willing to do, you will reap rewards for the rest of your life, and you will be a liberated man, and you will be able to sip iced tea and sit on the beach. Now, I wasn't the least bit interested in sitting on the beach. I mean, really. I mean,
yeah.
That was, like, to me, that was silly. Like, well, I got better things to do with my life than that. But it was the idea of not being trapped. It was like, well, you know, if I have a part-time business and it generates all this money, then, or all this, well, they have all these words, like it generates all this residual income. Okay, then I could go do all these other things, and that all sounded great. And
yeah,
it was the way I wanted the world to be. Now, is it possible to generate residual income? Yes. You know, are the opportunities like that exist in the world? Yes. However, what I have found is that the ones that actually deliver it, that deliver that, never use that language.
Yeah.
Like, any time you see the words walk away income, somebody's lying to you. Like,
yeah,
just do a web search, quote, go to Google, type quote, walk away income, unquote, and just, like, flag every single web page that comes up, okay, this person's lying to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there, go ahead, Joshua. I think you got some good. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to make a quib comment of the only thing you should do in that case is literally walk away. It's like,
yes.
You know, what I mean, like the walk away income. It's like, okay, I need to walk away from this. That's your clue, because it's just not smart.
Right. And so it becomes the cult of things that can be made to look a lot easier than they really are.
Yeah.
That's the should-be world. The is world is, hey, let me tell you how it really is. Let me tell you what you really need to do to make something work. Let me tell you about how it might not work, and if it doesn't, why it might not, and what the risk factors are. And I think that I see my role in the world, in the particular little corner of the world that I occupy, is when people are ready to stop the should-be stuff and engage with the is stuff, now they are ready for what I do.
Oh,
and there's a whole bunch of people that aren't there yet. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to sell them a big fantasy.
Right. Well, and I agree with that 1,000%, because, as a note, and we could get into why what you just said makes autoresponders and the way you set up your maze so powerful, but we won't go down that rabbit trail right now. But the fact is, 5 years before I ever took the bobsled run, I signed up on your 5-day AdWords, you know, for the definitive guide, your 5-day course for the definitive guide. And I basically did almost nothing because there was something about your messages that kind of bothered me. I'm just being brutally honest with you. And that something.
You got to tell me more about that. That's fascinating.
Yeah. Well, deep down inside what sort of bothered me was your brutal, direct honesty of the way things really are is the way things should be. Like, for example, I distinctly remember reading, you had at the time, I think you still might, you had at the time an article about the Wright brothers. And there was, I don't remember the names, but the Wright brothers were working on the wings and this other guy was working on the engine, right?
Yeah.
Well, the thing about that story that bugged me is that by like reasonable, rational sense, the guy with the engine should have won that battle. He like had the power and the muscle. He was like, he had all the investment tools and all this, you know, he like had the backing and the crew working with him and all the different stuff.
He was employed by the Smithsonian.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, he should have won, and he had the cush budget, and here's these other guys over here that were looking at life and not worrying about what should be, but just trying to take reality as it came to him. And they recognized that if you couldn't float in the air, it didn't matter how much power you had behind you. And so, anyway, without getting into the nuances of the story itself, the thing that bothered me a little bit was there was this thread through all of your stuff about, it was pervasive and it was subtle, and it was like, here's the way life really is, and I'm just gonna, you know, tell the way things are. And at the time I signed up for your newsletter the first time, I was still heavily engaged in the should-be world. And it really, and I was like, ah, that can't be that way. And so I went off and, you know, did another deal and invested in another, in another fantasy land. And oh, man, I spent 5 years of merciless pain that I can't, I won't get there. But
ain't it great?
Yeah, it is great, but the interesting thing about it is when you say some people aren't there yet and some people are, it was quite literally, I did nothing else with Planet Perry until that day when I decided to be a big boy and start dealing with things the way they really are. And again, I distinctly remember that conversation with Margie and so we started engaging at a real level. And there's a couple of things I found out about that, if I can just kind of follow that train of thought really quick. I found out that you not only had to have like all the positive mental attitude folks out there kept shoving down my throat that all I had to do was have a good enough attitude and by golly, the world was my oyster. And I'm not discounting the need to be optimistic and to be encouraging and to be positive and all those kinds of things. I think there's enormous power in that. But I thought that's the way the world should be, is that all good intentions should materialize in your life and be attracted to you and just, you know, appear. And what I found out, the reality was, is there was, you had to have the right know-how and you had to have a little bit of sweat equity behind the baby, because otherwise, it, you know, all the positive affirmations and do-gooding attitudes just, you know, didn't amount to much without the other stuff.
Well, you already knew about sweat equity, though. Wasn't there some other missing ingredient to what they were telling? I mean, you already had a positive attitude and sweat equity already.
Well, yeah, but I wasn't doing any of the right things. I mean, the missing ingredient was the ability to put all the puzzle pieces together and do the right stuff.
Okay.
Like, and there was another aspect of it that was the 2 to 5 year myth that was so prevalent. Like if I'm really honest with myself, yeah, I didn't mind doing the work, but what I did mind doing was facing the reality of what it really took. And that's a kind of a tricky one to explain, but it's like, I really just wanted to get, I wanted to do that work thing for a couple of years and just get on with life. And again, I'm not saying that it's not possible to, put together a good solid business that grows and has some aspects of giving you some freedom and flexibility in life. The fact is like, you know, I'm enjoying that now to a large degree. I don't have a particular boss that I have to answer to all the time, but there's still parameters on my life that demand my time and my attention to keep my business growing and my income growing, and there's some things that I really like about it. But I guess what I'm saying is that I didn't want to face the fact that that I couldn't just do that 2 to 5 year thing and then be free, quote unquote, for the rest of my life.
Maybe one way of describing the difference is you were looking for an escape, and what you found you needed to seek was points of leverage.
Yeah.
Just my view on this is, there's a lot of people who, you know, they don't like what they do every day, they don't like their job, they don't like their commute, or they have this big frustration, and they think that what they want is a big eject button.
Yep.
Right? And
yep.
It's like, well, no, you don't actually want that. If I give you that, well, that would be really cool for some period of time, but after a while you'd get yourself in some kind of mischief, who knows what,
yeah.
You know. What you really want is something where the input that you put in produces a large output.
Right.
That's what you want.
Yeah, that's really what I, that's really, and frankly, that's still what both you and I, and hopefully most everyone on this call are continuing to look for. It's like the commodity that all of us have that's irreplaceable, I guess it's not a commodity, it's time, right? Like, more money or less money can always be made. Money is a variable, and money is just a made-up thing we make up anyway. But time is not. Time is this concrete thing that keeps on marching forward, and we can't get it back. So the real thing that I wanted, and to put it in your terms, because I think it's really true, is recognizing that I only had so many hours in a day, I wanted the leverage point to make every hour continue to increase in what it was returning back to me. So if I put in 40 hours a week on my business or my job or whatever, and it was making me $50,000, what I really wanted to do is not figure out how to do 100 hours a week to make $100,000. What I really wanted to do was figure out how to do the same 40 hours and leverage that to now make $100,000, and then figure out how to leverage that to now make $200,000 and keep the same 40 hours. Or, you know, maybe over time even decrease the hours, and so that I can do 30 hours and make $500,000, or whatever the case may be. But you're absolutely right. That's really what I wanted. I didn't want to totally eject out of the system. I wanted to leverage my my ability to make more dollars per hour.
And I would propose to everybody listening, something for you to consider is, it may be possible to accomplish as much as you're accomplishing in one-third the time.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I was a space cadet for half of the year. And I worked probably about 5 or 10 hours a week, sometimes less, and because I knew all the right leverage points, I knew what I had to show up for and what I had to do, and the business kept running fine. I was talking about this yesterday on a teleseminar we did with Finn Peacock, where he got this job and he figured out how to have his job done in by 9:30 in the morning. He'd come in at 7 or 7:30, and he would have everything done that he needed to do by 9:30 in the morning. And the rest
this
of the day,
an,
he did what he...
was an employer?
Yeah, he had a, he actually
employer.
Worked for the Australian government.
Okay, yeah.
And the rest of the day, he did what he wanted to do, which was research all this other stuff. And,
wow.
And I'll tell you, there is... another guy we had on a teleseminar yesterday, he was talking about how when he does performs a certain service for somebody, he gets $60 an hour, and his time is worth, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of $40, $50, $60 an hour. And I said, hey, pay attention, because I will guarantee you that you know, if your whole week averages out to $50 an hour, your week is not $50 an hour all week. Your week is actually, it's actually 30 hours that are worth $10 an hour and 10 hours that are worth $200 an hour. Or three, or whatever, however the math.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. There's some of his time that's generating a lot of leverage, and most of his time that is not. And if you can get rid of the low leverage stuff, the good news is there's always some higher level leverage stuff with both of these guys. You know, one of them's time is worth $50 an hour. They still both agreed there are things they do that are worth $1,000 an hour. Everybody has stuff that's worth $1,000 an hour. there's $10 an hour little jobs, and there's $100 an hour things that we do in our day, and there is $1,000 an hour stuff that we do in our day. So, back to you. So keep going with the story. Uh-oh. Did I lose? My apologies. I think we lost Joshua, so he'll be back. I thought I lost me. So anyway, that's what comes out of the 80-20 principle. It's why I talk about it so much, is that there's a 20% that produces 80% of your results, and then you can get rid of the other 80% and focus just on the 20%, and you're at a new 80 and 20, and there's still a top 20% of the top 20%, and you start focusing your time on that, and you do have very, very high leverage.
Yeah.
So, Joshua, continue with your story.
I think I'd like to get into, and if you want me to head in a different direction, let me know, but I think it would be really interesting to kind of tell the rest of the story, like...
Please.
Like, where did I kind of have that aha moment, and what did it mean for me, and then what components changed in my life, and then what does life look like right now?
Yeah, please.
The most fascinating thing to me was making a decision that I was going to do something I had never done before, which was get myself a real bona fide mentor and coach. Like, through the Amway days and all the other business things that I had done, I had had what I would say advisors or information sources, and, you know, people like... I had bought books and seminars and tapes and those kinds of things, right? So I had sources of information, but the thing that I had never done was made a commitment to really find someone that would give me personalized, specific, targeted information like a mentor does, right? And that was and I think one of the reasons why is because, you know, number one, I was too chintzy because, you know, those kinds of coaches usually cost money, and I didn't recognize the full value of them. And number two, there was a part of me, and here's another rabbit trail we could go down, but I don't want to right now. but there was another part of me that was really just terrified of success. Like I had become, on the one hand, I was sick and tired of the wolves always being at the door, but on the other hand, I knew how to handle the wolves, and I was, you know, I could deal with what those guys threw at me, and with what, you know, not having substantial success in life could throw at me. And so there was a part of me that was actually safe and comfortable there. And even though the wolves were at the door, well, the fire was still burning inside the house, and their food was on the table, and, you know, we figured it out.
There is a certain comfort in the familiar, even if you hate it.
Yeah, I mean, look at, as I've thought about it, I thought of all the, and I don't mean this to be a sexist comment, but I thought of all the girls in high school that, like, always went and dated the jerks, and then complained about dating the jerks, and then went and dated another jerk. And it was like, why do you keep dating the jerk? Well, the guy was comfortable being a jerk, and she was comfortable being jerked around. So they made a good pair, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy, we could do it. We could talk for an hour. Because
yeah,
cause it's what she's familiar with.
Yeah.
Well, right. Dad was a jerk, and she doesn't even realize she's kind of attracted to him.
Right.
And that, by the way, that goes on in the exact same way in the whole business opportunity world.
Yes.
Okay? It's like people who are beaten down and they have no self-confidence in everything, they get attracted by, I'm going to teach you confidence, I'm going to make you successful. And then, you know, after they've been in it a while, it's like, well, you know, the reason you're not successful is because you have all these worms and maggots in your head, and you need to stop listening to those worms and maggots, and you need to just listen to me.
Yeah.
And a real coach makes you think.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. 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 A real coach doesn't go, you know, just follow my little thing. You know, there's a give and take and a thought process and you know, anyway. Let's not go down there yet. But the point is, for all those reasons and more, I had specifically avoided finding some personalized mentoring and coaching that would really be, you know, kick my teeth in and make me step to the plate and really do stuff, right?
Yeah.
And that day in the office with Margie was kind of that gulp, okay, I'm going to do it. And I remember, so what I did was, is I applied for, I think you called it accelerated goals at the time.
Yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, and which included, you know, I thought, well, if I'm going to do it, if I'm going to get my teeth kicked in, if I'm going to, you know, finally have some consistent, stable success, then let's just do the whole jalopy. And so I signed up for, you know, round table and bobsled run and four-man intensive. I just, you know, whatever Perry had to offer. And we could get into a lot of reasons. And I don't want to make this sound like an over-glorified Perry worship session. But, you know, there was a lot of reasons why it was Perry and not, you know, half a dozen other gurus that are out there. And, you know, maybe we can get into some of those nuances later. But, you know, I had decided it was going to be Planet Perry. And that was where my coaching and mentoring and kicking the teeth was going to come from. And so I just signed up for the whole jalopy. Now, remember, at the time, I had had one really good year as a copywriter and a semi-okay year, and I had another client, and I had a few clients at the time. But, you know, I just had the money to spare to jump in and do your top-level program was probably it would be an extreme exaggeration. You know, it was like, how can I figure out how to scrape the money together every month to pay for this? But I knew it was important. So anyway.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why we have payment plans and stuff. It's like, well, if you hit the ground running, and you're ready to go, then we'll make some improvements right away.
Well, and frankly, that's what I was banking on. I was like, yeah, and it was actually Margie's argument to me that really kicked me over the fence, and that is exactly that. She said, honey, I know you can do this, and if Perry's really as good as he says he is, then it shouldn't take you more than a couple of weeks to, you know, a month or so to really ramp this thing up and get your business back where it needs to be. And then, you know, I think it was whatever the payment was, $1,200 or $1,000 or whatever it was on the monthly pay plan that you had at the time. You know, that'll be nothing for you. That's just, you know, that's not even one sales letter for you to write. That's not even, you know, one consulting session, you know, with a client. That's just nothing. Don't worry about that. And so we jumped in, and the first thing that I did, and I jumped in 8 weeks. 8 weeks?
Yeah, you were late.
Yeah, I
was like midstream. We're halfway through a bobsled run something.
Yeah, halfway through a bobsled run when I decided to do this. And by the way, that's because it took us 4 weeks of Margie and I talking back and deciding whether or not we were going to do bobsled.
I didn't know this.
Meantime, it's merrily going on its way, right?
Mm.
Oh, and knowing what I know now, you know, having lost that 4 weeks cost me.
Well, you made up for lost time.
Yeah, I did. But
okay,
but
you came to a four-man intensive.
Yeah, I want to get to that because the first thing that I did was come to a four-man intensive. I mean, literally, I signed up, and you had one like 5 or 6 days later or something. And maybe it was 2 weeks. I don't remember, but it was quick. And I came, and, you know, my session, I kind of came and bumbled around and told you a little bit about my client, and we got some stuff done. But really, what for me, what it was, and again, everyone's four-man intensive experience is different, but here's what it did for me. And there's three other guys in the room and businesses, and as you started, you know, each one had a different aspect of their business that needed to be torn apart and re-engineered, right?
Yeah.
Well, as I'm sitting there in the room and listening and taking notes to what these guys were going through, there two things simultaneously happened to me. Number one was, for the first time in my life, and I don't know if this is a big deal for others, but it was big for me. For the first time in my life, I'm like, oh, holy cow, I'm not the only one with, like, crazy schizophrenic ADHD brain running around out there trying a gazillion things. And, like it was just this, it was like sitting in a room with some brothers, you know. And it was really refreshing for me to see these guys all hitting the road, running hard, struggling, but winning, you know?
Yeah.
And that was awesome for me. It was.
It is a lot of fun when you have a room full of people that are winning together.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all in a slightly different game.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's really deep down, it's the same game, but on the surface, yeah. It looks different.
Yeah, it was awesome. But the second thing that happened to me that was just, it blew my mind, and it was such a powerful visual epiphany for me. The puzzle piece analogy is the best one that I have for it, because over the course of those 2 days, it was like here was Perry in this room with these four guys, and we all walked in the room with a box full of puzzle pieces, and they got spread out on the floor, and all of a sudden they started get putting back together. And I remember when it all clicked to me, like all the stuff that marketers had been doing to me for years, all the stuff the Amway guys had done to me, all the stuff the investor guy had done with me. I mean, all these persuasion mind games and marketing tactics and, you know, online business strategies and the newsletters and the mazes and the sales letters and the selling points and the seminars and, you know, I mean, all the stuff that goes into successfully building a business, all the top level components, right? Like, whoosh, gelled together for me right there in Perry's office. And I think you even remember, because I think at some point I went, whoosh, and like, you know.
Yeah, you started like spazzing, shaking right and spazzing. It was really kind of hilarious.
Well, it was like, you know, 12 years of chasing down this idea of how to put a business together and what the components meant and how to do it and how to persuade people and how to get people to buy and how to manage the back end and how to do the front end funnel and all those kinds of things. Like, all the things that I had seen and never could quite figure out how to all put together, and more importantly, never could figure out quite how to apply to my business, like, zoop, came all together in that single moment, and it was a very, very powerful experience for me. So what did I do? I was like, I'm going to test this sucker. I'm going to see if this is really, is this epiphany real? I'm going to go do it. And so I went back, and at the time I had a client who was in the Forex business. He was teaching people how to trade Forex, and he was doing okay, I think about $20,000-$25,000 a month or whatever in revenues. And I came back from you. You're in Chicago, and he was in Ohio. And I came back, and I said, Dave, we got to meet. So, like, a week later, I flew out to Ohio, and I sat down, and I basically regurgitated everything I had learned at Four Man Intensive, and through that, you know, one week of bobsled running and going back through Definitive Guide. And we sat down and had this mastermind session and laid everything out for him. And then I went back from that and started implementing. And like, the results were unbelievable, and I still get wired up talking about it today, because it was a really fun point in my life, because we went in and we did a survey, we did some market research, we relooked at all of his keywords, we tweaked up his website, we redid landing pages, we redid opt-in pages, we redid the sales letter, and and every time I would face something, I'd come back on that week onto the bobsled run, and I'd be like, okay, you know, if we were in a team action call or group calls or whatever we were doing, there was always Q&A. I mean, every week it seems like there was Q&A, and so I'd always butt in and steal the floor and be like, okay, I'm doing this, what do I do next? And well, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And since I was on the top level, Perry, it was you I was doing this with, and I was like ruthless about implementing this stuff. And we took that business from, you know, $20,000-$25,000 a month in sales. 8 weeks later, by the time Bob said it was over, because I got in 4 weeks late, 8 weeks later, it's cranking at like $75,000-$80,000, and it's got this huge growth curve, and we're just piling people in and selling stuff left and right. And it was just, so yeah, I made up for last time, but, I think I made up for lost time because I was so hungry and because for me the whole experience was so vividly crystal clear. It was like, oh, finally there's someone who will challenge my thinking, help me get pointed in the right direction, force me to like really think about what it is, and then has wisdom and counsel of lots of years of experience to back up their suggestions. And then I'd go implement stuff and it would work just like you said, and it was just cool.
Now, how have you carried that out in your consulting business now? Because this has been a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
So, fill in the rest of it.
So, the rest of it is, can I tell the sad part of the story really quick?
Sure.
the weird part of the story is, I grew that guy's business so fast, I think I mentally, like, short-circuited the guy. Or I don't know what it was. Without getting into it.
Well, that really does happen. If people suddenly become way more successful, it's kind of like you go from, well, I'm stuck in the mud, and I'm forward, reverse, trying to get my car unstuck, you know. And then you get out on the highway, and you get up to 95 miles an hour, and the mud that's on the tire rim starts tearing the car to pieces.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, it's okay.
Yeah.
You just need to know that could be a result. So
yeah.
Keep going.
Well, long and the short of it, some laws changed that we're starting to regulate the Forex industry a little heavier, and he got nervous. The long and the short of it is, I called up one day, and he shut his whole business down. Now, again, he was a client quasi-partner. I mean, I was operating off of commission and percentage of growth for my fee with that guy. And at the time, it was a... because I had focused so heavy on it was a good portion of my income. And so it was like, you know, he pulled the plug, and I don't know if you remember the conversation, Perry, but like I called you in a panic. Perry, my client just shut his whole business down and my income's gone, and like, what do I do?
I'm at least glad you didn't blame me.
No. it certainly wasn't your fault.
Yeah.
Perry, you jerk. You made this guy's business grow, and now he ejected because he can't handle the money.
Yeah.
I hate you forever. but here's the cool thing about that, and I think I mentioned this once before to you, and that is I moped around for a week or so, and then I basically woke up, and based on a comment you had made to me and some stuff Margie said to me, I was like, wait a minute, if I can make that guy's business grow, I mean, convincing people to you know, break out the wallet to invest in Forex and learn how to do that, holy cow, I mean, come on, there's got to be other businesses that I can help grow. And you know, so I did two things. I took the principles that I had learned in terms of, you know, all the puzzle pieces, because now I had it. Now I had a clear understanding. And you know, within another week or two, I had a website up and a sales funnel of my own, and I was getting in touch with potential clients, and I was shocked at how fast. And this sounds really braggy, I replaced and then doubled, and then within a few more months after that tripled and quadrupled. I mean, I blew way past the money I was making with that guy by taking what I knew about the puzzle pieces and applying them to other clients' businesses. And, again, from all kinds of different avenues and areas and different types of clients, but, you know, really once I had figured out the principles, and luckily at the time I was still in Roundtable, and still am now, but, I was still in Roundtable, I still had a mentor, I still had a coach, a second bobsled run started up not long after that, I jumped in on that, and so I went through a second time, and it was like reading your favorite story the second time. You see all these, there's all the things that you remember that gave you warm fuzzies the second times, and then there's all these cool nuances that are like, oh, I didn't even know that was in there. That's a part of the story. That's an aspect I hadn't even thought of. Or seeing a movie or something that's for the second time and seeing those things you didn't notice the first time. And so going through bobsled run just like exponentially increased my ability to provide for my clients and to make money for myself. And it was just really, really powerful experience, and it was enormously profitable. And in some ways, I'm really glad the Forex guy pulled the plug, because without that experience, I wouldn't have had the ability to be so confident in the system and the concepts and the concept of mentors and my ability to recover. And it gave me this unshakable confidence that, hey, you know, whatever the economy does or whatever life does, bring it on.
You know what we were saying about, you know, people wanting to know, do I have what it takes?
Yeah.
If you've had an experience that proved to you that you had what it takes, and just like, well, it wasn't just luck, and it wasn't just something that happened to work right. It's like, you can drop me out of a parachute from an airplane naked in a cornfield, and I can find a way to make a business work or help somebody else's business work, and I can eat and I can prosper because I have the raw tools and the abilities and the knowledge and the ability to ask the right questions when I put in a situation.
Yeah.
And when you have that kind of confidence, it's radiance.
Yeah.
And so you have that now.
Yeah.
And you carry it with you, and people see it. So you crossed that chasm. You went from the should-be world over to the is world. By the way, I just got a blog comment from somebody who's listening, and they're like, ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling, you know, 57 years, and you finally put your finger on it. So I really hope we helped some people today. So, and you said, all right, I'm gonna find somebody that's gonna tell me how marketing really works, not the way I want it to work. I mean, people will notice if they pay a lot of attention. There's a lot of bandwagons and a lot of fads that I don't even talk about.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay? It's like, I teach people the core essential basics, and I teach them the weird nuances of human psychology that actually make marketing work.
Yep.
And so, we actually have to put a wrap on this call, but
yep.
but we are starting a bobsled run on Tuesday, which one of the options is to take it with a four-man intensive.
Mm-hmm.
And the four-man intensive is at fourmanintensive.com. It's the number four, fourmanintensive.com. The bobsled run is at bobsledrun.com. And this is what we do. We have a guarantee that if you come into this program, first of all, you have to be accepted. We do not accept everybody. We don't take anybody that has a business that we don't think we can seriously help. And it's not like some fake thing. We really do turn down some of the applications. But if we think we can help your business, we'll make a guarantee. And the guarantee is, you put down the money, pick the payment plan, whatever. By the end of the course, if you do the simple steps and the assignments that we give you, and if you do not recoup all your investment because your business is improved, by the end of the thing, we'll give you your money back. And we also guarantee that 1 year from now, if you've documented your progress, if you've done the assignments, 1 year from now, if you do not feel like you've made $25,000 that you know, more than you would have, then you can get your money back. And, you know, I really believe in this. Matter of fact, I was talking to Jack just before this call, and he said, like, step it up a notch. And so I'm gonna add $1,000 to the guarantee. Okay? Like, if you go through this, if you're accepted and you go through the bobsled run and you do not get the results that I just described, we'll give you a full refund and we'll pay you $1,000. Now, you're going to have to get off your butt and do the work.
Yep.
And we are actually going to, one of the first things I'll do in the course is I'll outline some time management stuff, and there's some distractions that I'm going to ask you to shut out so you can focus on doing this thing. But I want to help people succeed. This thing starts Tuesday. We're taking applications right now. It's at bobsledrun.com. And if you think you're ready for a four-man intensive, go to four-man intensive. You can read about that. That's like an enhanced bobsled run on steroids. So, Joshua, is there any last thing that you would want to say to somebody that's on the fence?
I want to say one thing that's kind of a mind blower and one thing that's more down to earth. And the one thing that's down to earth is everyone's wondering how to get ahead and how to, you know, stabilize themselves and their income. And the fact is that the best way to do that right now is to gain that confidence, what I gained, you know, to have a measurable victory and to know you've got a mentor and someone on your team that's giving you the real story and is going to help you grow. And so, you know, whatever bobsled run costs is, you know, should be a very small, significant investment.
It's less than $3,000.
Yeah, that, you know, I mean, it's less than $3,000. And
it's a lot more than a bunch of e-books, but it's a lot more focused. It's not, you, for $3,000, you could go buy a lot of e-books.
Yeah,
and now, great, okay, so now you're drowning in all this information.
Yeah, but I spent 15 years buying e-books.
You know? Or what? Right.
I mean, or the equivalent. But what was that compared to a real live mentor that helped me through the process? Nothing. It was. You can't even make the comparison, and that's where I wanted to bring up the mind blowing thing. And that, at the risk of sounding horrendously braggadocious, your $25,000 guarantee. Literally, without even flinching, I can tell you and the listeners that, you know, there's been times now since I've gone through that experience and put those puzzles together where in a single month I've made that and more from applying the principles of bobsled run and the other. And, it, you know, so to give a 12-month guarantee when really you can recoup that money plus in a month is very generous on your part, but it's so realistic and doable. So my recommendation is do it and go get signed up, bobsledrun.com. So.
Okay. Well, Joshua, thank you. Everybody, thank you. Best of success in your transition from the should-be world to the is world, and let's make the is world a better place, eh?
Okay.
Thank you, Joshua. Thank you all. Take care.